Welcome to the Flow Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 11:57 a.m. and today is January 17th, and it's Martin Luther King Day, so U.S. stock markets are closed. But I thought we'd kick off with bond yields. The 10-year yield in the U.S. is up to almost 1.8%, and it's completely unwound the big compression that we saw right in the teeth of the pandemic. But we have an extremely high degree of commonality right across global government bonds. And I think it's important to just run through some of those. So, for example, when we think about the 10-year yield in the UK, it's marching higher. And that's been one of the, I think, the stronger arguments for why the pound has been rather firm. But it's up to 1.18%. There's a clear sequence of higher reaction lows. It really looks like it's completing this inverse head and shoulders base formation. So certainly the region of the neckline held during the pullback to the region of the trend mean. Then in Europe, German bunds are flirting again with the zero bound. And they're only in negative territory now by 2.5 basis points. This also continues to look like a firming environment. So, and there's obviously the potential here that if it can push back above the zero bound, well, it will have completed the base formation. And obviously, that's going to be a big change for Germany because they've been able to borrow for free for the last 3 years. So obviously that's a major change. And Switzerland has also, it has already pushed back above the zero bound. So this is obviously a big question for government bond investors. Is this the beginning of a new trend, or will these gains in the yield quickly be reversed? But what I thought is interesting is that Chinese government bond yields are starting to come back down. And now the interest rate differential between the USA and China is only about 1%. So China's government bond yields continue to contract. And of course, that is because there is a threat to growth. So one of the primary reasons why people were favoring China's bonds during the pandemic was that it was faring better than other countries and had done a better job of containing the spread of the coronavirus. And people then also looked at the currency, which remains very stable, and they were willing to give the benefit of the doubt to China that it would come out ahead. But now the pressure that's been coming to bear on the property sector. And China's high yield bonds have been continuing to contract. So if we just simply look at the high yield index, it's trending downwards. And of course, that means that the bond yields are trending upwards. So China cut interest rates today. That's the first clear evidence that they are starting to step in to try and support the economy. And of course, growth will be contracting, and property prices have been falling for 6 consecutive months. Now, of course, the magnitude of the fall hasn't been especially large, but property prices coming back, and property developers going bust almost on a daily basis. Is obviously taking a toll on consumer sentiment. But then there's the potential that if China is willing to cut interest rates and then start to print money and be much more accommodative, then that's likely to act as a key support for asset prices. And we can look at, for example, the more speculative portion of the market, which is the ChiNext index. And it did pull back in a more violent manner than it has done for a while in the early part of the year, but it is now beginning to steady. And we've also started to see that the CSI Real Estate Index has also begun to steady from the region of the 200-day moving average, having pulled back rather violently last week. But when we look at the news headlines, and they are looking increasingly dire, the fact that the real estate sector is starting to, in fact, appreciate, well, then that would suggest that investors are at least beginning to give the benefit of the doubt to the view that China will not be able to continue to squeeze leverage out of the property market and instead will have to go in and try and support the economy. And that's a big source of potential liquidity for the global economy as well. So I'm posting a memo from Howard Marks in here today, and he's discussing the merits or otherwise of selling. And his conclusion is that selling's never a good idea. So there have to be some really big changes to a trend in order to really justify selling. And I've got two issues with that. The first is that this view about selling, well, it becomes, or it tends to move in big cycles. Because after a massive decline, the vast majority of people, they want to take their profits early. Now, that's usually the wrong decision. Now, the time to buy positions that you're willing to hold on to for a good long length of time is precisely after a big decline, because your risk of taking a loss is much reduced and the potential for a significant capital gain is much improved. And then after an awfully big advance, and certainly when we think about the performance of the Fang Man plus Tesla shares, well, they've done spectacularly well and they haven't really gone anywhere for more than a year. So that index is back in the region of the trend mean right now. Okay, sorry, I should describe it as a ratio. But they're not outperforming the wider market to nearly the same extent any longer that they used to. And then I think it's also relevant to highlight the sectors that are doing well. So global banks are beginning to push higher. And this is an awfully long base formation. Of course, after the financial crisis, the global banking sector has been in all kinds of trouble. Then we had the sovereign wealth crisis in Europe, and the European banking sector pretty much went bust. The better capitalized, and the fact that the USA went through the home foreclosure crisis and bailed out their banks and then got them to basically reform their balance sheets has contributed to US banks doing substantially better. But the fact is that the global index, which contains banks from both North America, Europe, and Asia, is now pushing up through that 1,000-point level. Well, this is beginning to suggest that investors are willing to bet that interest rates are going to be somewhat higher. But then we also have the commodity complex, which continues to recover. And it was at a new recovery high on Friday. Now, we're still at a fraction of where the price of the index peaked back in 2008, but it has clearly broken higher over the course of the last 18 months and taken out the peaks from this lengthy range between 2016 and 2021. So this continues to look like a new bull market overall. And I think this is the other big point, is that secular trends come and go, and they can last for a decade, maybe even two decades or three decades at a time, but eventually they do end. So remaining invested is difficult at the best of times, but we certainly need to also be aware of what the fundamental background is and how could it possibly change, and what those kinds of determinations will be particularly relevant when we also see underperformance, because The investment business really is about relative comparison. So when we start to see interest rates rising, and low interest rates having been by far the most important factor in supporting asset prices over the course of the last decade, well, then when we see other sectors beginning to respond to those higher rates, there's the potential that what we're looking at is secular change. And catching the secular change is, I think, one of the most important things one can do with one's money, because if you miss the secular change, you could be sitting through a decade of nothing. We can think about some of those European stock markets where the FTSE 100 peaked in 2000 and really is only just beginning to break upwards again. And it tried to break out between 2017 and 2020, and then took a big hit during the pandemic. And we can also then just do the same comparison with Europe, where European indices are certainly after rebounding in a really impressive manner, but we're still only in the region of the peak from 2000. So this is the completion of a 22-year range. And if you'd remained invested, well, you're probably now in positive territory. And if you were getting paid dividends along the way, well, you might have gone into positive territory sometime before now. But you'd have missed out on a phenomenally large bull market on Wall Street between 2008 and now. So certainly paying attention to the secular themes and the secular trends is going to pay dividends over time. And it's looking increasingly likely that we're moving into more of a commodity-led bull market, and that inflationary pressures are going to ebb and flow, but more likely than not will trend higher. So we've had a big spike in inflationary pressures over the last 6 months, and it is now very much within the public consciousness, and not least because gasoline prices continue to march higher. And also, of course, home prices and the significant rebound we've had in lumber prices is down to supply problems resulting from weather in British Columbia. So this is obviously going to contribute to the higher cost of building homes, which will help to support home values. I think it's likely that we're moving into more of an inflationary environment, but ultimately it's going to be about the pricing of a relatively small basket of goods and services. So the Philadelphia Semiconductors Index rebounded rather well on Friday, and we're not at the point yet where we have the big push, because these indices are still trending higher. It's just that they're not trending higher in quite as impressive a relative performance manner as they had in the past. It's when markets start trending downwards that we start to see mass migration into other asset classes. And then, of course, there's the big question about the trend of the dollar. And the dollar has pulled back into the region of the trend mean. It's still an uptrend overall. And as long as that remains the case, well, we have to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. But it's in an area where if support is going to be found, then it's going to be found soon. So I think that's an important characteristic. Then we can also think about some of the big stories that are going on out there. And the Russian ruble remains quite steady, but the Russian stock market is pulling back in a rather violent manner. So there's certainly some risk getting taken off the table because of fears about what Russia may do in Ukraine and what it is doing in Kazakhstan. So obviously, that is something that's putting some pressure on the Russian market, but also you have the fact that Natural gas prices in Europe are starting to come back down as well. So we've had this incredible spike higher, and now the price is coming back once more into the region of the trend mean. I don't believe that prices are going to come back below 100. And if they do, that's likely to be very close to where the terminal value for a decline is likely to be. We're in a new price setting environment, and carbon credit prices are also still holding the vast majority of their gains. So this is a completely different market, that the introduction of carbon credits increases the cost of energy to just about everyone. So it's a tax on productive capacity, but on top of that, it's going to also sponsor additional other sectors to compete with fossil fuels, and it's likely to be a significant factor in remaking the global economy. But of course, the big question for some of the big beneficiaries of that change, like copper, will be in how well do the promises of additional spending actually translate into real spending. So, copper prices have been going sideways for most of the last 7 months. That suggests that we are back in a position of supply and demand being relatively balanced. So we certainly have growing arguments that copper may even be oversupplied in 2022, but the price remains quite steady, and we're in the region of the peak from back in 2011. I continue to think that this looks like a consolidation overall. Now, if we're in an environment where inflationary pressures are going to remain higher, but central banks are inhibited from doing what's necessary to curtail that inflation, well, then that is positive for gold overall. And the price continues to hold the move above $1,800, but it hasn't, so far at least, mustered the wherewithal to push up and through that $1,850 area. But I continue to be of the view that it's only a matter of time before gold breaks higher. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.